Mark Maron. It's 6 past the hour here on Air America Radio, and this is Morning Sedition.
That's right. It's a scream is right for today. Oh, my God. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor. Good morning, Angelinos, Oregonians, Floridians, Tennesseans. Is that how you say it, Riley?
Yes.
Tennesseans. Vermonters. Portlanders. That would be under Mainers. How are you, Mainers?
Mainers.
Texans. Everybody out there in the great Air America family. Good morning to you, Kent the Colonel Jones in the booth, Clutch Larson. Feeling a little muted today because you can't talk directly into our heads. Sometimes Larson can just pop right into your head. You know that, Riley. Just go,
hey,
this is Larson. Now, apparently there's something wrong, so there's not going to be any Larson interruption in the head today. That's going to be something, isn't it? Kalo on the board. Kalo the Costco ho. Let's go. Adjusting back to his schedule. Yeah, you were gone for a week, so how's it feel, buddy? How's it feel to live like a mortal and then get back on the late-night shift, buddy?
It's kind of hard, dude.
Yeah, no kidding,
like,
it's hard.
My bodily functions are all off. Like,
let's not go too far into detail.
Not too much,
which ones? How do you know that your bodily functions are off?
Well, at 2 o'clock yesterday, normally I'm, up and about.
2 in the afternoon.
Yes, 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Okay.
And I just crashed. I fell asleep on, my couch.
Oh, I know that one, where it's like you have no choice. It's not like, maybe I'll take a nap. It's like, wait a minute, I'm napping, yet I'm not sitting down. Yeah, I know that one. Riley, what's going on with you? How you doing?
I'm doing okay, man. I'm feeling all right, flying low and all that sort of thing. I actually took a nap yesterday afternoon as well.
I did not take a nap. I did not.
And are you bragging or complaining?
I was cranky yesterday. I was, I really was cranky yesterday, man. I was mad. And I was mad. I was mad for the right reasons, but I was also mad for the wrong reasons. Because, as a liberal, as a progressive, as a Democrat, as somebody who is unhappy in this culture at this point in time, you have a sort of ongoing current of madness at the base of your being, all right, that will never be satisfied because we're pretty much screwed in terms of on a legislative level. It's clear that, there's a lot of things that are going to happen. We're just going to have to buttress ourselves for and hopefully get through these next few years. But my madness was a lot of irritability yesterday as well. I was just mad and I wanted somebody else. I wanted to project my madness onto somebody else and give it to them as a gift, Caleb. I wanted to give you my madness yesterday. You wouldn't have it. No one, Riley's certainly not going to take it. Larson will absorb a little madness occasionally.
A little. But not too much.
I can't do it to my cats. My wife takes a little bit of it. But why can't I just be a grown-up and let it go, for God's sakes? And realize that it's okay. We're going to be okay, folks. But I worry about the people. Listen, we're going to talk about... Why is Larson coming into the room?
Uh-oh.
He's out of his booth. Clutch Larson is at what?
I just want to let you know, after you called me yesterday, Brendan and Dan, while you were on the phone, Brendan and Dan came by to my place to pick something up, and I said to them, you'll never guess who's on the phone.
Yeah, and what
they said. They said married.
They rolled their eyes.
Come on! I got nothing to do. My wife is in California. I can only talk to cats for so long before I start to feel like a loser. By the way, the cats, all of them, starting to come around, feeling a little warmth. All of them starting to like Mark Maron.
Uh-oh.
How do you like that? Even the cutest one who I thought was a gaunt. They're all starting to come around. I don't know what it is. They're scratching at my door. They're crying. They're animated. It's great. Anyways, Larson, what he was talking about is he had leftover beer in the fridge from a party he gave 2 weeks ago that he didn't know how to get rid of. He's on a diet. You know what I mean? And he don't want to drink it. So he called Dan Passman, son of Lewis and Linda Passman, New Jersey. Brendan P.W. McDonald apparently made a special trip for the beer.
Just for the beer.
Got some priorities there.
Okay.
So what I wanted to say about this broadcast on this day, the day where they probably are going to push through legislation that will compromise people who are already compromised even more, is that if you have money and you don't care about people, this is not your broadcast.
Absolutely.
If you
go somewhere else
and don't care about people, this is not it. Because there's some problems, folks. I don't know what the people are going to do. I mean, right here, I got a report coming out this morning that buyers increase their borrowing on credit cards, auto loans, and other types of consumer debt at an annual rate of 6.6% in January. That's the fastest pace in 3 months. And this is out of the Federal Reserve reported this the other day. Now, right now, in this world, the number of uninsured, in the United States is profound. Am I right, Riley?
It's 45 million people.
45 million people. More workplaces, no pensions. More workplaces, no health coverage. More workplaces are not, there's not going to be any minimum wage hike that we can see, certainly not in the most recent bankruptcy legislation amendments. There's no guaranteed Social Security is now in question, but we're hoping that thing will stop. You know, they're out there on the Screw the Future revival show. Dick Cheney and Bush are out on the road bringing their Screw the Future revival show somewhere near you if you want to see that. So what I'm saying is I'm starting to think that I don't know what's going to happen to the people, Riley. It's an adapt or die situation. And I don't know what's going to happen to the disenfranchised that are going to grow in numbers, even more so than we ever knew. And all I'm saying is as we move through this show today and as we start to, you know, parse these amendments and this legislation and what's going on with this bankruptcy stuff and talk to your friend Luther Gatling about, you know, what can be done practically on a personal level around this stuff, you'll find that now they're okaying, the Justice Department is okaying that faith-based initiative money, that organizations that get faith-based initiative money can now discriminate on terms of religion. That means they can hire and fire indiscriminately, on the basis of religion. This is where government money is going. So the arc that I'm looking at, Riley, if I'm not getting through, is that all these disenfranchised people will be left no option. They can't get medicine for their depression. Okay, they can't get medicine for their health problems. All right, they're not going to feel any hope. They lose their jobs. They go bankrupt. Where else can they go? Come on in. There's money here at the church. Do you dig what I'm saying? And this is one of those elements of fascism, you know, that I've been hung up on, you know, for the last week or so by this guy. I'm going to start crediting the right guy, Lawrence W. Britt from Free Inquiry magazine, in his 14 telling points about describing a fascist state. All right. Number 8 is religion and ruling elite tied together. Unlike communist regimes, the fascist and proto-fascist regimes were never proclaimed as godless, but by their opponents. In fact, most of the regimes attached themselves to the predominant religion of the country and chose to portray themselves as militant defenders of that religion. Okay, now what's happening here as we move through this show, and we're going to talk about it with the number of evangelical Christians in the government today and homeschooling and a school that basically is producing new politicians through under the umbrella of evangelicalism.
Evangelism. It's okay.
Evangelism. This is all moving toward this, but we are going to start now with the legislation that's going through today, the bankruptcy legislation. Let's talk about, Riley, let's talk about some of those amendments, how they've shut the door right out of the gate on people in need.
Well, they've shut the door out of the gate, and one of the things we ought to do is, and it's so strange because I had this discussion with my wife just the other day. Paul Krugman in today's New York Times talks about the, quote, debt peonage society.
Culture of debt.
A culture of debt. But what he talks about is the studies of Jacob Hacker, a political scientist at Yale, where he talks about the fact that over the last three decades, since the 70s, the lives of ordinary Americans, quoting from Paul Krugman, have become steadily less secure, and their chances of plunging from the middle class into acute poverty ever larger. Job stability has declined. Spells of unemployment, when they happen, last longer. Fewer workers receive health insurance from their employers. Fewer workers have guaranteed pensions.
Well, let's throw a couple numbers out there, Riley. Americans are accruing more personal debt. In 1990, debt totaled $808 billion. In 2004, debt totaled $2.1 trillion. Americans are spending more. In 1990, personal outlay totaled $4 trillion. 2004, personal outlay totaled $8.5 trillion.
More than double.
Americans are saving less on their after-tax income. 1990, personal savings totaled $300 billion. 2004, personal savings totaled $100.8 billion. Even Warren Buffett, the wealthiest guy ever.
Yeah.
Or he's got things to say about the tone of the economy, about debt culture, and about, you know, how much trouble we're in. And we'll get back to that when we come back. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition,
the highest rated, most respected news show in America.
On Air America Radio.
Are you?
19 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
Risk privatization, a steady erosion of the protection the government provides against personal misfortune. That's part of this. That is part of the neocon death cult strategy to basically, you know, starve the needy. That's their deal. Adapt or die. Let's get into this legislation. Now, we don't think it's going to be voted on today. There's been a lot of amendments.
We don't know. At this point, it could be. It might not. I know it is due up this week sometime.
This is to make it almost impossible for an individual who's having trouble to declare personal bankruptcy. All right? The Chapter 7 bankruptcy, as we know it, is on its way out. And the Republicans are accusing humans of taking advantage of it, whereas the numbers just don't show that. Basically, what it says is that 9 out of 10 bankruptcies, this is true, occur because of health costs, loss of employment, or divorce, not irresponsible personal behavior and poor financial planning, as the industry maintains. And, of course, that industry that is has bought out the legislators on this one is the credit card industry that makes $30 billion a year. This legislation would boost their profits 5% a year, according to analysis by Morgan Stanley and Dean Witter. And these are the people that caused bankruptcy, predatory lending. And let's talk, Riley, about those that the Democrats did everything they could except, you know, four of them seemed to be voting on the wrong side of the aisle for a change.
Well, some of them voted on the wrong side of the aisle. In all, there were 14 amendments that were, actually 15 amendments, one of which was agreed to. That was Jeff Sessions' amendment.
Mm-hmm.
He, of course, is a Republican. The other amendments were defeated, and the important of those that were defeated were the kind of amendments, for example, one that was introduced by Senator Ted Kennedy to provide protection for medical debt homeowners. In other words, if you have catastrophic illness and you end up having to spend a lot of money on that and you declare bankruptcy, they won't take your house. That's essentially what that one.
So that one got rejected.
That one got rejected.
So, okay, so let me just make sure I understand. If you're sick, you have cancer. All right, and you had health coverage when you got the cancer, but it's a specific type of cancer. So they called President Bush and said they got this kind of cancer. And President Bush says, well, you know, it's up to you. You're an HMO. Make your own decision. If you want to cover it, think of a loophole. Now, we don't cover that. We covered it at the beginning, but now it's really bad and it's going to cost us too much money. What do you do? Well, I'm broke. I tapped out my car trying to pay for my cancer. Can you help me out? No, sorry, we can't. Give us your house. Is that what that means?
That's essentially what it means, that they do have the ability, under certain circumstances, to make you sell your house.
Mm.
And we talked to a caller who went into bankruptcy and was forced to sell her house anyway. Now, there was another amendment that would have limited the interest on any consumer debt to 30%. That, too, was rejected. That was introduced by Senator Dayton.
All right, so that means, okay, I'm in debt, dude, and I can't get out. Can't we put a cap on this so I don't have to, you don't keep escalating these fees on me? Can we just cap it out at 30% and maybe make it manageable for me so I might be able to pay it? No, right? That's
no,
what you're saying?
Okay. That's right.
Just want to make sure I understand.
Senator Durbin of Illinois introduced an amendment that would have discouraged predatory lending practices. Now, we ought to be clear about what this means, because in some cases, predatory lending has to do with real estate. That's not what we're talking about here. In this case, predatory lending is people sending out credit cards to your family, your dog, your cat, children.
Yeah, let me make sure I understand this. Your 11-year-old son comes in after he went to pick up the mail for you because he was excited. He likes to get the mail. And there's actually four credit cards made out in his name. Is that what you're talking about?
That can happen. But it's also just the credit card companies sending out stuff to regular consumers.
I get it all the time.
Unsolicited stuff to regulars.
0%. That's how it starts.
Yeah,
the
0%.
Start. I can't stop.
0% for 15 minutes.
Mm.
The rest of the time, 31% if they want to.
If they want.
Yeah. Now, that was, of course, rejected as well. There was an amendment by Senator Chuck Schumer that was to would have the effect of limiting the exemption for asset protection trust. Now, that's a very complicated term. The easy way to describe it is that's how rich people shield their money.
So if a rich person goes bankrupt, they are entitled to hide their assets in states that will allow them to open up trust funds that go transcend this legislation.
They transcend the legislation.
Is that the right way of putting it? Does that make sense?
That's the perfect way of putting it, because what it does is shield the rich while making working and middle class people.
It's sort of like
the brunt of this.
Hiding your money offshore, only it's onshore, and it's not usually as much money as you might find offshore.
Yeah, okay. Exactly.
Yeah.
Now there were of course also the other two amendments that were rejected yesterday. One was Senator Ted Kennedy's amendment for a minimum wage increase that would have had the effect of raising the minimum wage rate to $7.25 an hour over 26 months.
So you mean giving people a little more money so they might be able to pay their debt? That's out.
Yeah.
Okay.
That fell 49 to 46. It was a very close vote. And some Republicans actually crossed the line to support Senator Kennedy's minimum wage increase.
Oh, that's
the
nice.
Other one was Rick Santorum's, which even Santorum himself said was a red herring to try and get people to make sure that Kennedy's wouldn't pass.
Okay.
Santorum's, in addition to a smaller minimum wage increase that would have gone up to 6.25 as opposed to 7.25, Santorum's would have given a bunch of breaks specifically to the restaurant industry to the tune of about $3.4 billion.
Wow. So what about this one? What about the amendment about that would force credit card companies to disclose their clients how long it would take to pay off their balances if they made only the minimum payments?
Wouldn't that was the Akaka amendment, I
think. Wouldn't you think that would be a nice thing to do? Like, you know, that, you know, hey, look, here's how you can pay it off. This is how much over this amount of time. Just on the front of your bill. These bastards don't even want to have that on there because they want people to be in debt. They want to suck people dry. They want people to go broke. That's their game. They own you. It's a culture of debt. Ownership society. For who?
Well, you know, that's the thing that Warren Buffett is talking about. On the one hand, he's saying that Americans are just spending junkies, and maybe this latest thing about people buying big-ticket items might bear him out on that. But what he's talking about, see, the thing you got to realize about Warren Buffett is he's going to make money no matter what. I mean, this is a very, very savvy guy, and he's making his money right now by betting that the dollar is going to continue to fall against other currencies.
It's one of these guys. People like Warren Buffett are like Nietzschean. They're beyond good and evil. They're beyond politics. They are the world in terms of the ebb and flow of yin, Marx, you know, like that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know what he's got? $21.4 billion invested in foreign exchange spread among 12 currencies. And the reason why he's doing that is he's betting the dollar will fall and he will make a windfall. Now, what he's saying that's important is that more and more foreigners are buying up American corporate debt.
We
that's
are
gonna make
owned.
Us all sharecroppers.
We are owned.
Yes,
that's right.
We are owned.
All right,
and it's a scary thing.
On a personal level, we're going to tell you, give you some pointers of what you can do and what to look out for. Luther Gatling, a buddy of Mark Riley's.
The credit doctor.
President of Budget and Credit Counseling Services will be with us.
Yes, he's a good man. He'll tell us how we can get out of this quagmire, at least on an individual level, when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Right. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Are you getting...
I like that song. 34 past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Yo!
Ramon just came in wearing a clerical gown. Is that what you call it, a robe? A clerical robe?
Clerical garb.
Yes, so and he brought us, Pope John Paul's getting out of the hospital this week, and I guess this is why he was here. Ramon got us his Palm Pilot. Pope John Paul, here we go. 7 a.m., wake up! Whew! It's all gravy after this. 9 a.m., remember, the doctors told me not to speak for a while. Glad I learned those five languages. 11 a.m., racquetball, rock climbing. Gotcha.
I still got it.
2 hours in the armchair. 12:30 p.m., take communion. Whew, that blood of Christ goes right to my head. Right to my head. 2 p.m., summon up all remaining energy to compare gay marriage to the Holocaust. 4 p.m., lie down for a nap. Make sure all my affairs are in order. 6 p.m., prepare a sermon for March 20th, Palm Sunday. Hey, it could happen. All right. Before we bring on our guests, I want to read one other thing about Professor Britt's, you know, characteristics of fascism. This is a piece I've been quoting from. Power of corporations protected.
Although the personal life of ordinary citizens was under strict control, the ability of large corporations to operate in relative freedom was not compromised. The ruling elite saw the corporate structure as a way to not only ensure military production, but also as an additional means of social control. Members of the economic elite were often pampered by the political elite to ensure a continued mutuality of interests, especially in the repression of have-not citizens. That in mind, in talking about credit card companies.
We're going to hopefully have our guest, Luther Gatling, on with us in a minute, the credit doctor. He's over in Teaneck, New Jersey. He's not
hey, buddy, how you've known this guy
I've
for a
known
while.
This guy for at least 25 years or so.
He's got, you know, he knows some stuff. I mean, that's a long time to be talking to people that are having trouble. And a lot of people have trouble. This is the scary thing about this bankruptcy legislation, is that, you know, many people who are about to declare, there's so many people right on the verge of bankruptcy now, Riley.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a big concern, is that, you know, most people who are about, look, women and children are hit especially hard by bankruptcy. More than one out of every six mothers will go bankrupt by the end of the decade. And families with children are about three times more likely to file bankruptcy than households without children. And that's not, you know, that these are not people that are looking for an easy ride. Let's get our guest on the phone. Luther Gatling is not only a friend of Riley's, but he's the president of Budget and Credit Counseling Service. He knows his stuff. Good morning, Luther.
Good morning. How are you, Mark?
Good morning, Luther. How you feel, man?
Hey, Mark. How are you?
Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
So what's your experience with dealing with people who are declaring bankruptcy? Do you find that these people are, as the Republicans characterize them, looking for an easy out, running from their responsibilities?
Absolutely not.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that bothers me. There seems to be a blanket to try to put the blame on the consumer as being irresponsible. And that's not so at all. It's the proliferation of the credit that's being extended. And from my experience, if you really take, even though there is an increase in the bankruptcies, if you take a look at the percentage of the bankruptcies filed against the credit even 20 years ago as to now, it's the same thing.
Oh, okay.
You know, it's not that the consumers are doing it. It's not that at all.
Right. What are the biggest misconceptions about credit cards?
Well, the credit card becomes the catch-all.
Right.
I mean, it's not just, you know, people think that the credit card is just used to go out and purchase, you know, just frivolous goods. You know, in this economy, for instance, there's not a lot of people that are out of work.
Yeah.
And what happens is the credit card becomes the thing that saves them, because it becomes the unemployment insurance. People start to use credit cards because they think they're going to get a job right away, and there is no job. So then what happens is they find themselves really pressed, and if you take a look, 49% of the people that file are filing because of illness, because of health reasons.
You know, Luca, that's a very important point, and I'm curious how you see the current bankruptcy bill that's in the Senate in terms of how it will affect, if at all, what you do in trying to get people's debt reduced.
Well, what I hope it would do, and I hope some of these amendments will do, is say that, okay, credit counseling services, and this it really helps, credit counseling services will make sure that people really need to file bankruptcy and not do it frivolously. But I think that's a bad stigma right now that the creditor community is saying that people are doing it just to take abuse the law. The law is not being abused at all, not at all. And the bankruptcy law as it exists is fine, and there's no real reason to change it.
Now, Luther, when it comes to this kind of debt, we've been seeing stories where people simply, and I know that we've talked about this over the years, where people charge a relatively small amount of money, and then they get late fees piled on, they've got interest rates that the Senate refuses to cap at even 30%, and next thing you know, a $1,000 debt turns out to be a $3,000 or $4,000 nut because of all of these charges. How does a consumer deal with that? How does a consumer get past it?
It's even worse than that, Mark. A person could have a bill for $42 and be late for some illness reason or whatever reason, and then there's a $29 late charge on top of it. So now look what's happened to that bill as a result of it.
$69.
Once again, the consumer gets it, you know. And that's just not the way it ought to happen at all.
So, like, within a few months, a $50 bill could turn into a couple of hundred dollars.
Absolutely. And then, you know, one of the other things that happens, of course, is they start sending out credit cards, and you'll go to your mailbox today, and you'll see stuff that says that you're a preferred customer.
That's the predatory lending thing.
Exactly. That predatory lending is there, and then you read the fine print, and the poor consumer's in real trouble, and then want to take advantage of the bankruptcy. I have never seen over the years anybody that's filed a petition to bankruptcy and did it with a smile on their face. People, when they do, they know that's their constitutional right to do it. But when they do it, they're apprehensive about it. They don't want to do it. They have to do it as a last resort.
And in your experience, Luther, when people do this, you know, do they, you know, after being in the business 30 years, what's the percentage roughly of people that pull their lives back together because of this?
Most of them do, because it really, if you take a look at the Bankruptcy Act, it says to give a person a fresh start, and that's what it does. If you're an artist or an announcer on television or radio, as you guys are, and you get in debt so far that you can't eat, you can't sleep, you can't have sex, you can't do anything.
Yeah, it's paralyzing.
You're paralyzed.
Yeah.
But once that relief comes, and in the bankruptcy code the word relief is in there, when that relief comes, that person's able to be a productive citizen once more back into the community. And I've seen cases where people get to the point where, gee, I filed bankruptcy, but I want to pay that debt back now, even though the law says they don't have to.
Luther, let's start at the beginning here. Let's start at what consumers should do if they get that thing in the mail that says, and I know you've talked about this before, you're a preferred customer, and they don't always read the fine print. What do they do when they get the stuff in the mail?
I'm a preferred customer, Luther.
What is that?
I'm a preferred customer.
Yeah, you're the same old dog you were last year. And that's what I well, first of all, why should there be the fine print? It's even on radio, you'll hear an announcement about a certain credit, and then all of a sudden somebody starts talking gibberish, and you can't understand what the heck they're saying, and that's the idea.
They're saying we own you now.
That's exactly right. We own you now. And there is not enough education. I mean, we do it all the time. I've tried to get education into the school systems to start teaching people how to deal with credit. Credit is not bad. Credit's not bad at all. It's the way that it is issued and the proliferation of it, particularly with college students that are, you know, graduating out of college in all kind of debt because they've gotten a credit card as a freshman with no job whatsoever.
Hey, now, let me ask you something, Luther. Now, if they make this Chapter 7 impossible for individuals to get, and that means that their only option is Chapter 13 bankruptcy, now, where does that leave somebody, you know, after they declare bankruptcy?
Well, if a Chapter 13 is really where you pay back the debt over a 3 to a 5 year period of time, and it can be a certain percentage of the debt. From what I understand now, they're putting a $6,000 minimum so that the person, no matter what situation they're in, has to pay back $6,000 of its debt over a period of time. Now, where does that leave them? They still got a mar on their credit report because bankruptcy, whether it's Chapter 13 or Chapter 7, stays on that credit report for a 10-year period of time.
Mm.
That person has been penalized for 10 years because now every time they go to get something or buy something, that bankruptcy pops right up.
So they're a pariah in the consumer world.
Yes, that's right. All right.
Hey, Luther, it was great talking to you. Thanks for joining us.
Luther, okay, appreciate it, man.
Okay.
You take care. Bye.
Take care.
Hey, look, if you've had experience out there with bankruptcy helping you, 866-303-2270, we'd love to hear your story because, you know, this is going to really hurt people who are already on the verge of bankruptcy. They're not leaving us any options, folks. The neocon death cult and the fiscal Republican arm of that particular group at this point in time is not leaving us with many options, and it's a frightening time for those people who are already on the verge of that situation. 866-303-2270. Why don't you call us up and share your story? It's 44 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition. Right now, call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
We'll be right back.
49 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Air America Radio's Morning Sedition program. We're taking your calls, 866-303-2270, about your experience with how bankruptcy helped you. Here's today's liberal agenda. Now, remember, today is International Women's Day. One, insist that the United States come out with one more unpopular dollar coin with a woman on it. Suggest the Sarandon silver dollar. Two, how far have women come if we still have a TV show called Bad Actress? If we must have it, weight challenge thespian, but only if we must. Three, ladies, wear a large bandage on your forehead to work. When people ask, tell them you bumped your head on the glass ceiling. Four, get in someone's face and nurture them. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Gee, we get a whole day? Not 67% of a man's day? Hey, thanks, pig. Wake up, sheeple. Men are obsolete. Dig that.
You know, people are buying into the sheeple thing, too, huh?
Well, it seems like it's been around. Yeah, we got some T-shirts somebody sent. It came across my... Someone actually told us where they think they first heard it, but I don't remember where. Let me just read this. One more thing. This is the 14 characteristics of fascist nation states that I've been leaning on from from Professor Lawrence W. Britt, appeared in Free Inquiry magazine. Power of labor. Suppressed or eliminated, since organized labor was seen as the one power center that could challenge the political hegemony of the ruling elite and its corporate allies, it was inevitably crushed or made powerless. The poor formed an underclass viewed with suspicion or outright contempt under some regimes. Being poor was considered akin to a vice. Now, this stuff, that's already phased, you know, that has been done in this country.
Yeah.
All right? You know, and anyways, we're going to use more of those as they apply, but certainly that applies, and the power of corporations protected applies to what's going on right now with bankruptcy. Let's take a call, Laura in Long Island. How are you, Laura? What's up?
Good morning.
Hey, Mark, how you doing?
All right, how you doing?
Oh, I'm good. You guys take me into work every morning. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Okay.
Thank you for listening.
Well, the reason I'm calling is bankruptcy hasn't been able to help me, and it's just so funny because it's just so apropos. For the last 2 years, I made less than $11,000. I was actually on food stamps, changing careers to be a teacher. So I tried to file bankruptcy, but because the housing prices went up, I was stuck in a catch-22 that I owned too much of my house.
Yeah.
So they wouldn't let me file bankruptcy, but I have so much debt that hasn't been paid that I can't get out of the hole.
What did they do, tell you to take a home equity loan?
Well, they said, yes, their theory is, well, since you have more than $10,000 equity in your house, you should be able to take a home equity loan. The only problem is, who's going to give a home equity loan to someone who has a credit score that's less than 680?
Mm-hmm. So you really are in a catch-22 then?
Absolutely. I just got all my credit reports. I'm in the process of trying to figure it out, and I'm just spinning in circles.
Wow. Is it mostly credit card debt?
It's all credit card debt.
Oh.
All revolving credit card, because I sort of lived on them thinking I was going to get a teaching job quickly, and it took me 2 years to get a job.
Hey, Laura, I'm no credit counselor, okay? But we just talked to one who's an old friend of mine, and I can tell you this. You can individually negotiate with the credit card companies to reduce if you have a lot of late payments.
Right.
Or if you have, you know, the interest that's on the debt. You can negotiate that stuff downward on your own as a consumer. You can call the bank or call a credit card company and say, look, you know, I have X number of dollars in late fees. I want to try and get this reduced so I can really, if they believe that you really want to pay it, they will reduce some of this stuff for you.
Which company are you dealing with mostly?
Well, I've got a bunch of them. They're, you know, like Citibank and Chase and stuff, and I should be able to, but some of it's been sold off. I don't even know who owns the bills anymore. It's one of those that it's just, you know, I sleep 3 hours a night because I'm up.
Was this one of those things where they sent you a bunch of cards in the mail? Is that what happened to you?
Yeah, like I called up for a credit card, and, you know, I just needed like a $2,000 credit card for like 1 month to tide me over, and all of a sudden I get a $9,000 credit limit.
Oh, yeah.
I swore I wouldn't use it, and then all of a sudden, well, let me just do one more thing. And all of a sudden, I'm maxed out on the credit card.
Well, maybe you should do what Mark suggested, and when you hang up, I'm gonna help you out in sort of a metaphoric way. All right.
Okay,
so thanks,
yeah.
Thanks for calling,
thanks
us, Laura.
Thanks for calling, Laura.
So she said it was Citigroup and Chase. Now, the net income for 2004 at Citigroup was $16.98 billion.
That's what it'd be.
All right, and they can't help this woman out. And Robert W. Willemstad is chairman and CEO. And, you know, I just think that maybe he needs a little liberal lead. What do you think, buddy?
I'm down.
All right.
Oops.
There you go, Robert. Sorry. It had to happen. Actually, I'm not that sorry. And how about who we got? J. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase, net income for 2004, $4.41 billion. William B. Harrison, chairman and chief operating officer. Good morning.
Boop.
There you go. A little liberal ed for a couple of CEOs this morning.
And by the way, both of them, both Citigroup and J.P. Morgan Chase, charge a top interest rate of 29.49%.
Dig these numbers, bro. In 2004, Americans paid $14.8 billion in penalty fees, $6.1 billion in cash advance fees, $3.5 billion in annual fees. These people can't cut people a break. They need more protection by this stinking administration that have been bought out by these companies in Delaware. Awful.
You know, it seems like they're almost saying to people, please pay late. You know, you got a double-digit billion dollars worth of late fees. Hey, pay late some more.
We got David driving a truck in Georgia. What's up, David?
Hey, David.
Hey, Mark and Mark. How y'all doing?
All right. How you doing?
All right. Listen, man, I've had to go through it twice. The first time was back in 1980. I was farming, and I'd been through two droughts, and I decided enough was enough. And my bills were basically, you know, farm bills,
mm-hmm,
that I filed. But the second time, and that was Chapter 7, as a matter of fact, and it's traumatic, especially for a black man.
No, I understand.
But the second time, I went into trucking, and I, this high fuel price caught me, and the truck was started giving me a lot of problems. So I filed Chapter 13 this past time. That was back in 2000.
Yeah, and is that hell? Are you?
I was determined to pay that money back, and that's what I did. I paid every creditor that I owed to file the claim. I paid them back this time.
Congratulations!
Congratulations! Yeah. And see, this is what David is talking about. He is the rule. He is not the exception. People do want to pay these bills back. The Republicans on the floor of the United States Senate ought to be ashamed of themselves for acting as though the American people whose interests they profess to champion are a bunch of deadbeats. That's a load. It's a load that's been sold by credit card companies and banks who make billions off of people paying late, never mind people not paying at all.
And also, this is one of the phases of fascism taking over this country, along with the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigades, which we'll cover later, and just no out for people who have not.
We got a knucklehead who's going to be in charge of the UN, the America's interests at the UN. We'll tell you about that when we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Do you want...
It's 6 past the hour. The show is Morning Sedition. It's Air America Radio. Good morning, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians of all kinds, with sense of humor or no sense of humor. I know you're sensitive. Look, we have been talking all morning about bankruptcy legislation. Right, Riley?
Yes.
Right, Kalo?
Yes.
All right, so we're on board. Clutch Larson in the booth. Brendan's still on the phone typing some calls. We're going to take a couple more calls just to get people up to speed. Look, folks, we're in trouble. This thing's going through. They're probably going to vote on the Chuck Schumer amendment today. What they're trying to do is they are trying to prevent people from filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy. Chapter 7, which gives people a clean slate and makes and it will make them file Chapter 13, which requires continued payments to the credit card companies. In order to qualify for Chapter 7, Americans will be forced to complete a costly and bureaucratic means test. Even after they complete the test, their status could be challenged, forcing a expensive litigation that most debtors can't afford. But that doesn't matter to this administration because they don't care about that type of frivolous lawsuit. They don't care that that people are suffering. They care about the credit card corporations, which are their big supporters. The credit card industry already makes $30 billion a year. The legislation would boost their profits by 5% a year, according to analysis by Morgan Stanley Dean Witter. Yet these same companies have played an integral role in triggering the rise of bankruptcy through predatory lending. In 2001, credit card companies sent 5 billion solicitations for credit to American homes. Between 1993 and 2000, the industry increased credit extended to the public from $777 billion to almost $3 trillion. $3 trillion. Once a consumer accepts, the companies are allowed to change the interest rates at any time for any reason. All right? And what do these people do, Riley? What's up?
Well, Schumer's amendment, Senator Chuck Schumer, who's from New York, his amendment is a very interesting one. Because what it would do would be to block anti-abortion protesters who are fined for violent conduct from discharging those fines through bankruptcy.
Now, there's something clever about this, but for some reason my brain can't even process it properly. You called it a poison pill amendment before we got on the air. Explain to me, help me out.
Okay, let me explain how this works. He attached this once before to a bankruptcy bill, and it had the effect of killing the bill because Republicans in the Senate do not want to drop this shield from anti-abortion protesters. The way they're trying to frame it is that these people are nonviolent and they're exercising their First Amendment rights.
Except for the ones that shoot doctors.
Yeah. Now, the Schumer Amendment is talking specifically about people who do violence around abortion clinics, and we've seen people being killed, in fact. Around
the ones that blow up things.
Yeah. And what he's saying is that, and what this amendment says, is that if you fine these people, they should not be able to get rid of the fines simply by declaring Chapter 7. Now, again, they have made an agreement in the Senate that these amendments are going to have to pass with 60 votes. That's not a simple majority, as we all know. That is almost a veto-proof majority in the Senate because there's only 100 people. So what that means is that it's going to be a very, very close vote on this particular amendment. The conservatives have been rallying their troops. I accidentally went onto a website earlier when I was looking for some more detail about the amendment, and it says, send your congressman, send your senator a note or email them or call them or whatever you have to do to make sure that they vote to kill this amendment.
That was a good accidental website go-to. I've used that accidental thing before. Sometimes it doesn't work. But this is true. Contact your senators. Contact them today if you can, and try to show them or tell them that you believe that this legislation should be stopped. Now, there are people out there. I got to be honest with you, folks. I mean, the unemployment rate increased 5.4% in February from 5.2% in January. 8 million Americans are officially considered unemployed, but as many as 6 million more are only working part-time because they can't find full-time work or they've given up looking for work entirely. I mean, the number of uninsured Americans is 45 million. The number of Americans who have lost their health insurance during Bush's first term in office was 5 million, and this is getting worse. And now they want to push this through, and they're trying to convince people also that their Social Security should be gambled away through investments in the future. I mean, these people are really disenfranchising a tremendous number of people as we sit here talking. Every 30 seconds, somebody in this country goes bankrupt. I mean, where's the protection? Where are these people going to go? They can't get their medicine. They can't get jobs. Some of them have to work several jobs. They can't guarantee. Now they're afraid of the Social Security. What's going to happen to the people? Don't they care? And the thing is, I tell you, as Democrats, we're going to have our work cut out for us because there's going to be a lot of people that are going to need exactly what Democratic values once represented. And we're going to have to rebuild this thing up from the ground after these people cut and run.
That's
a disaster.
That's the important thing, because what they're doing is little by little, through each and every program and each and every initiative that you're discussing, they are peeling away the protections that Americans have had, the guarantees that Americans have had, whether it's Social Security, numbers of pensions that are disappearing, number of employers that don't provide health insurance for people. All these things are being peeled away, and unless Democrats articulate a different vision, a vision that protects people against these sorts of things. This is going to steamroll because they've got the majorities in both houses of Congress to pass all
this.
That's
going out to you senators who are protecting credit card companies in your states, you Democratic senators. We'll have their names in a second. I want to take this phone call because this guy probably has to go to work. Hey, Brian, how you doing in Ohio?
Hey, Brian.
I'm doing all right. I just got into work.
Okay.
How's you guys doing?
This is one of your three jobs, right?
Yes. Yes. Ooh. I'm a latchkey teacher, and then I also work at a library as a graphic designer, and also I work at Barnes & Noble. So.
Okay. So what was your experience with bankruptcy?
About 3 years ago, I went through a divorce, and we split our assets up, and we had a large amount of credit card debt built up over the last 10 years in the 90s. And then. Mm-hmm. And I went to work with that. I went to a credit counseling place, and they got down my bills. I talked to the credit card companies, like you guys were talking about. And I eventually was paying like $600 a month to get the credit cards paid off. And I was doing okay with everything. I was like living in an apartment, and then all of a sudden I ended up having a mild heart attack.
Oh, wow. Man.
And I ended up going into the hospital for like 4 days, and I had $22,000 in medical bills.
For 4 days?
Yeah, and I had no insurance with any of my jobs because they're all part-time.
Right, because you're right. That's what they try to do. They try to get people to work part-time so you don't have to cover you.
Right, and so I had no insurance, and I was faced with these medical bills, and then I had to, I couldn't pay like the credit card stuff, so I ended up getting seriously into debt.
Yeah,
and the only way out was like to go. You know, try to do bankruptcy. I mean, it was like the last thing I wanted to do. I didn't, you know, I tried to avoid doing it as long as I could.
Uh-huh.
And that's also kind of a hard road because, you know, I had to go, you know, work through a lawyer and stuff like that to pay fees and that as well. But I did end up eventually getting the bankruptcy and went through the courts. And
was that Chapter 7, Brian?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it
and it saved your ass, right?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Now,
yes,
remember what would happen to Brian under this bankruptcy bill. They would means test him. In other words, whatever the median income is for the state of Ohio for you, Brian, I guess it would be for one person. If you make more than that from your three jobs, you could not declare Chapter 7.
And then if you fought the means test or if you had to fight your case, it would have cost you money to litigate and would have given you another heart attack.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was just, as I said, it wasn't, you know, a decision I came to lightly. It was
I hear you. That's great. I mean, and we're not taking it lightly either, and I think that's really the crux of your story is that you are exactly what most people who declare bankruptcy are all about. You don't want to. You do it because you have to, because you have to save your life, and you were compromised by medical expenses in the situation you're in, and it helped you out.
Yeah. And you are in the majority, Brian. Remember that. Half the people that declare bankruptcy do so because of medical illness, not because they want to smile when they walk out of the place because they don't have any debt anymore.
Okay, well, Brian, thanks a lot for calling. We're going to come back, and I want to take this call, too, later when we come back about this guy who fought with the Citibank. And also, you got something to play for us, right, Chris? All coming back in a second. It's 15 past the hour on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on the air and online. MorningSedition.com. Air America Radio.
Hey, 20 past the hour here on Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley. I'm Mark Maron. It's Morning Sedition.
Yes, it is.
We're going to talk to a guy who had a fight with a credit card company and won in just a second, but I want to share with you now because it's that time of day to do it, and people wait for it. My dream diary from last night. Okay, I'm bringing him in on Thursday. I'm on the plane to L.A. I got Los Lobos on the headphones when a voice interrupts. Mark, it's the iPod. Damn. It's fun going to L.A., isn't it? You always had some wild times there, didn't you, Mark? I say, what would you know about it? You're tense, Mark. Here comes the attendant. Why don't you have a cocktail, a beefeater and gin and tonic, or a Smirnoff screwdriver? Tune out. I say, shut up, I don't drink anymore. Or a Jack Daniels and Coke. Mmm. Sweet. Strong. sexy. You remember that night in Hollywood when you and that hot waitress were drinking Jack and Cokes and then you ended up at her house in the hills and then her dirty neighbor came over? I've seen the video. You could barely walk for a week afterwards. You used to be fun, Mark. Jack and Coke. I can't pull the damn buds out of my ears. Mark, why don't you call her up? What was her name? Cindy? There wasn't anything she wouldn't do. Or anywhere. Or Pam. She didn't even own underwear. You see lots of them, didn't there? I say, look, I'm married, okay, and it's great. You should also call Ricky. I think he's out of prison now. He can hook you up with some primo coke, heroin, crystal meth, ecstasy. Drugs would keep you from being so old and boring. You've lost your edge, Mark. I say, shut up! Like you're Mr. Edgy? You should go to the Beverly Center and buy some new clothes. Jeans from Lucky or Abercrombie and Fitch, maybe Diesel. Right now you look like a soccer dad, Mark. Somebody's boring old soccer dad. No one will screw you in those clothes. I say, look, all right, okay, shut up. I'll go to the Beverly Center and buy some jeans. Just shut up, all right? Shut up! Whatever you say, Mark. Get some new shoes, too. Those are disgusting. Tune out. I woke up and my bed was filled with La Tigra polo shirts.
Whoa, you know who would screw you in those clothes?
Who?
A credit card company.
That's right. Let's talk to Tim listening to Sirius in California. Tim.
Tom.
Tom, I'm sorry. Oh. I'm getting old. I need new glasses, Tom. Tell
you
us about
Jack and Coke, man.
No. Tom, tell us about a good fight.
Okay, this was back in the mid-'80s, and I was like $2,000 in credit card debt to Citibank.
Uh-huh.
And I tried to negotiate the deal with him to lower the payments a little bit, give me some time, and the girl I spoke with told me, look, deadbeat, go screw yourself, we want all our money, and we want it now.
Wow.
And I told her, I said, well, I can't do it now. No, we're not going to deal with you like this. Either you pay it, or we're going to come get it.
Wow.
So I just quit. I said, fine, sue me. And I didn't pay it. And I wanted to pay it, but with her attitude, I said, go screw yourself.
Uh-huh. And so, what happened?
Well, I didn't pay the debt. And it was a mark on my credit report for a few years, but it went away.
So you were in the right because they wanted you to pay the way they wanted you to pay it, and you weren't going to pay it that way. So you said, go to hell, and they said you go to hell, and then eventually they never charged you for it, and it just was a mark on your credit debt, but it didn't ruin your credit forever, huh?
Yeah, that's true, and it's not like they wanted me to pay it how they wanted to, and I wanted to pay it how I wanted to. I tried to negotiate. I tried to pay it for the longest time. I just couldn't do it.
So I just finally said no. Okay. Oh. And that was
right.
No, that's an interesting story. They just sort of let it go. You slip through the cracks somehow.
Well, they write off bad debt. All of these banks, all of these credit card companies, they write off this debt, I assume, against their taxes. Am I right?
That's what I'm thinking.
Tom. They write it off. And remember, they probably make up at least some of this bad debt from the late fees they charge people that do pay.
Well, thanks for your call, Tom. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tom.
I guess that's true. I mean, there was one time where I had, I had a credit card bill that I didn't know about. I had moved. It was for $81.
Oh, that's the worst time for little money.
And I had moved, and I had no idea. They didn't, for some reason, and it's pretty clear it was a devious reason, they didn't track me down to my new address. I don't know why, but when I went to get my credit checked, they're like, you got a problem. And I'm like, what do you mean I got a problem? And there was an outstanding debt of $81 for a couple of years that I had no idea about that had, it had gone through all the processes of, been sent to a creditor, blah, blah, blah. And I had no recourse. I mean, I didn't know, they didn't try to change the address. They didn't try to find me for the $81. And I was screwed. It wasn't even a matter of money, how much money I owed, because it had already gone through whatever cycle it had went through. And I don't recall at that time. I mean, this is going back. Wow, probably 14 years, and it was before they did that weird thing where they can put 30% interest on and everything else. So I don't remember it being an exorbitant amount of money I owed, but I do remember taking the hit on my credit report, and there was nothing I could do about it. Because, I'm like, but I changed addresses, and you didn't find me. Yes, sure. Yeah, yeah, sure you did. No, no, I'm serious. I would have paid it because I don't carry debt. Okay, yeah, whatever. So it marred my credit report.
It will mar your credit report, and it will mar it for a period of time.
I know it sucks. I mean, and I've worked so hard now to get my credit. You know, I have pretty good credit. I don't like to carry any debt if possible. Mm-hmm. You know, I am grateful that I don't. You know, I'm certainly not bragging. You know, but you know, you never know because you know when I got divorced, I went into the hole for a lot of money. And you need to do that sometimes. And sometimes, you know, the risk is you might not get out of the hole for whatever reason. And, you know, you shouldn't be forced to be destitute because of that.
You know what's the weirdest thing about credit card debt? And I didn't know this until Luther Gatling, our guest earlier today, told me. You know, not using credit counts against you. When you try to get credit.
No, I know, yeah. It's
ridiculous. It's very weird.
You've got to carry a little debt sometimes to get the credit.
To get the credit. You can have a clean record. You can have paid everybody back every dime.
The whole thing is rigged. We're going to take a relief, some comic relief, some powerful spiritual relief. We got the liberal confessional coming up next. Are you a liberal who has had, are you a white liberal who's had bad, bad thoughts about black people? Are you an environmental liberal who tosses your garbage in the street? Well, here's your chance to save your liberal soul. So give us a call here at the Liberal Confessional, 866-303-2270. I will confess my sins when we come back to my brother Mark Riley right here. And we got more stuff, too.
We got absolutions coming for you here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Before past the hour, it's Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Yo.
We're taking the confessions, 866-303-2270 here on Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Because, you know, folks, sometimes it's not easy being a liberal. We all stray from the straight and narrow from time to time. But when we need to unburden ourselves, we can always confess our liberal sins. If you want to take a turn in the liberal confessional, give us a call at 866-303-2270, 866-303-2270. But right now it's my turn. Bless me, Brother Riley, for I have sinned.
How can I ease your burden, my son?
Well, we got some emails complaining about the fact that I called strippers, quote-unquote, damaged, broken people. I know that the liberal take on strippers is that they are empowering themselves, making money, and are not inherently damaged. And I went against that, and so that's my transgression.
So you abandon the liberal neo-feminist view of the exotic dancer? I believe that is the correct term, exotic dancer.
Okay, all right, exotic dancer. But it's just that some of them are damaged. It doesn't mean that they aren't decent folks, but when I made that comment, I was painting with a broad brush, and liberals hate that unless it's about something they don't like.
Can you understand why the listeners were angry with you? Mark, just because someone finds themselves in a certain line of work that some may think unsavory, it doesn't necessarily mean they're damaged goods.
I know, Riley, but we're all a little damaged. I mean, I know I am, and I like broken people. A lot of my girlfriends were damaged or broken, and I learned a lot from them, Riley, a lot. I mean, I learned so many dirty, awful, amazing things. I'm sorry. Yeah, okay, well, let's be honest here. Say I was up on this broadcast console, right here, standing up on it, taking your glasses off of my breasts and inserting bar fruit into my most private parts, electively. When it's over, you give me a dollar. Would you take a message of my empowerment with you when you left, or would you say there might be other issues I was working through?
I would think a lot of things, Mark, but I might also think you had a child at home to feed, bills to pay, and that you felt comfortable with your body, so why not use it to make a living? A good living, if HBO's G-String Divas is to be believed.
Okay, wait. All right, then. Put yourself in their shoes. What if all through our show, I tried to touch your ass, even though you asked me not to, and the whole time, management looked the other way. Then when the shift was over, I gave you $20. Do you feel empowered, Riley?
You're confusing the issue, Mark. That's strictly a goods-for-services exchange, a business transaction. It doesn't matter why the woman does it. It's her choice. But by your judgment, you're revealing your own discomfort with yourself. You're projecting. You think you are broken, and you're ashamed of your own body. Here is your penance.
Jeez, that's deep, man. All right, hit me with the penance, Riley.
I want you to take my camera phone into exotic dancer venues and take pictures of what you think are the, quote, demeaning acts of a damaged person.
Okay, it's a little pervy, but then what?
Then return the phone to me. And then, I would like you to volunteer your services to various nudist organizations.
Mm-hmm.
You will perform your one-man show, The Jerusalem Syndrome, in the nude for large groups of naked people who don't think being nude is dirty and a sign of psychological damage. I want you to make a connection with these people. Squat down and really get to know the people in the front row. I think you'll find it a liberating experience.
Wow. Okay. Well, maybe I do have body issues, but... What was the whole thing about taking pictures at strip clubs with your camera phone?
Some mysteries are not for you to know, Mark.
Okay.
Now go forth and sin no more.
Amen. Thank you, Riley. If you have
no charge.
If you got a confession, 866-303-2270 is our number. It looks like we've got quite a few calls here.
Yeah.
Let's take, what do we got? Mark in Florida listening to WINZ. What's your sin, Mark?
Good morning. I'm a live and let live kind of guy, especially when you live in South Florida.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to learn to be tolerant. But I'm hoping, I'm not clever enough to do this, but I've been dying for someone to start a website that's called outgayrepublicans.com or something like that.
Outgayrepublicans.com.
I mean, you know, when you got people like Matt Drudge and you got the guy who's head of the Republican Party, and then there's other questionable people out there. These hypocrites. After this Jeff Gannon incident, I just can't understand gay Republicans. I mean, for life of me, I have plenty of gay friends here in South Florida. And I ask them about that, and they can't figure it out.
It's kind of easy to understand. Their entire personalities are based on repression. I mean, you know, everything about them is about repression and about sort of hiding things. But I think that what you want to do is a pretty noble thing, actually. But I think that in order to balance it, you know, just, you know, on a morality level, that you're going to have to post your entire sexual history on the site as well.
That's fine. I got nothing to hide, and they shouldn't have anything to hide either, especially when they're sleeping with the enemy. I mean, this is what I don't understand.
Okay.
I don't understand black Republicans either, but that's for another show.
That's another site entirely, and another penance.
I mean, that would be like Jews for Hitler. I just don't understand it.
Or Jews for Jesus, if we want to lighten it a little bit. Yeah, I mean.
But, you know, it's just that I think it would serve the country well to know that these people would be liberated, and they should be, you know, everybody should know how they really stand.
I think you're right.
Hiding behind.
I'm behind you 100%. And when you get a link, you know, we'll put it up on our website after you build the website. Now, are you straight yourself, or are you gay?
No, I'm straight.
All right, two separate links for both parts of the website for whoever wants to, and let us know how that goes, Mark. You take care.
And I'm having a hard time with this vision of you doing your show nude and squatting in the front row. That's really kind of bothering me a little bit.
Well, that's okay. It's not your thing.
I read it and it bothered me.
Riley read it and it bothered him. All right, Mark, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Mark.
All right, Nikki, living in Philadelphia, what is your sin, Nikki?
Nikki!
What's your sin, Nikki?
Hi. I took my boyfriend to see Ted Nugent last night.
The Nuge!
Last week. Yeah, at the Troc in Philly. And it was musically a great show, but I felt so dirty.
Well, you know,
politics, it was horrible.
I understand. Yeah, you know what? Let me tell you something, Nikki. I'll be honest with you. And I'm actually going to share something I've never shared on the air before. In my life, I've seen the Nuge 4 times.
Whoa!
Okay. Now, that makes me feel a little better.
Yeah, now, let me tell you something. It was not because I like the Nuge per se, but when I was in high school, that was the Nuge's heyday, and my best friend Dave was a huge Nuge fan. So I had to be dragged to see the Nuge, you know, like 2 or 3 times, and I never really liked the guy. And then I went to see him with my friend Jack Bulware, who's going to be on the show later today, because he had a cover. We went to see the Nuge and Bad Company in Concord, California, just to see how sad it would be. Now, I understand the Nuge's politics are awful, and the Nuge, you know, I personally don't like him, but I've had to sit through a lot of Nuge shows. Yeah, but I think that the thing you have to do is you're going to have to go see a couple of other bands from that time period. Is Toto around? What?
How about Duran Duran?
Music. Oh, I actually have tickets for Duran Duran.
That's a little later.
Tesla, and I saw Tesla the other night, which was brilliant.
Oh,
Tesla!
Wow, you're just an '80s person, aren't you, Nikki?
Yeah, which is kind of bizarre.
All right. Well, I
justified it by, because my boyfriend went to see Ani DiFranco with me last year, so I figured that I owed him.
You canceled it out?
Yeah, I guess so. But, I mean, it was that. I just kept feeling like he was going to look at me halfway through the show and say, see that girl with that, who's not smiling, she's not one of us, go get her. You know?
Are you kidding? He was probably looking at you going, thank God people still come see me for this.
Well, this is true.
I think we got to separate the nude from his music. I mean, it is a trans...
Yeah, and that's exactly what I tried to do, because even my boyfriend had no idea how political it was going to be, and it was...
Was he political? Scary.
Oh, absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely.
How do you politicize Cat Scratch Fever? How do you say this message is going out to all you liberals? Wang dang, sweet poo dang!
Well, the cowboy song, the cowboy song ended up being about George W. Bush being the greatest cowboy ever.
All right, well, now you've done it. Now
you've
created a horrendous transgression. You're going to have to hunt and kill your own food for a month.
Oh, I know. Yeah,
I got one for her.
What? What do you got?
Since you're an 80s person, the next concert you and your boyfriend should go see, Eric B. and Rakim. How about that?
Eric B. and Rakim. Do they even tour?
They might be if you say you'd go buy the tickets.
You have to go to their house.
I'll find it.
All right. Well, I think the Ani DiFranco thing might cancel it out. Maybe you have to go.
I'm a big Ani DiFranco fan.
How about the Indigo Girls? Are they touring?
I don't know.
Well, maybe you should look into that, and that'll cancel out some of the nude energy, but I don't know. You're just going to have to live with it.
Yeah, it's hard.
Did he do Great White Buffalo? Did he do Great?
He did. He finished out with that.
He did? How was that?
Wow, now we're getting a concert review out of this.
I'm sorry.
No, the concert itself musically was fine, but chanting various things about Jesse Jackson and Hillary Clinton.
Oh, that's awful.
Comparing them with Saddam.
Oh, man. Are you serious? So this is like a rally. Oh,
guys,
man.
It was like a rally.
Even if you're nostalgic, no one can go see the Nuge. It's over.
It was bad.
That's horrendous. Who was singing?
Wow.
It was so bad.
Was it the original singer?
It was bad.
The original singer guy?
No, well, Nuge. No, it was a three-piece.
Oh, just Nuge singing?
Musically, like I said, musically was brilliant. Nuge, well, he's such an egomaniac, the whole thing.
Yeah.
But what's hysterical, and you guys will appreciate this,
what?
The huge American flag is the backdrop.
And hanging
in front of it was TedNugent.com.
No. So let's not forget who Ted really cares about. But it's awful that he's doing that. And I never was... I'm revealed enough. Thanks for your call.
Thanks, Nikki. Wow, Ted Nugent, huh?
Boom. That's Pat Travers doing Hey Baby. I'm sorry. Now all of a sudden I'm in my head with all the songs that I liked in high school. Nugent did a cover of a George Harrison song that was pretty good, but I can't support him at all. That's awful. It sounded like a rally. Greg in Maine, what's your confession?
Good morning, guys.
Hey.
First off, I think Nikki needs to, for her penance, ought to go see Bad Religion.
Okay, all right.
They'll give her a good, strong dose of reality.
Will they cleanse the Nuge off her mental palate?
Oh, well, that's a high order.
What do you got, man?
Well, I feel really conflicted about this. I read some articles recently about the new generation of nuclear reactors and seen some prominent environmentalists, most notably the co-founder of Greenpeace, getting on board with this whole new nukes thing and as a solution to global warming. And I have to tell you, I'm on board, and I'm trying to convince my friends.
You're trying to do okay, yeah, but
yeah,
you're reconciled. You're okay with it.
Yeah, but I'm uncomfortable that I'm talking about the same things that Shrub is, you know?
That's right. Okay, well, you know what? We are going to have your penance. I'd like you to stay on the phone, can you, until after our break?
Yes.
Okay. It's 45 past the hour. We'll be back with Greg's penance after this and one or two more calls. Air America Radio.
Join the morning sedition right now. Call 866-303-2270.
What?
That's 866-303-2270.
You don't know until you've tried this.
Morning sedition on Air America Radio.
Damn good.
All right. good. All right. 50 past the hour. Mark Maron with Mark Riley.
This isn't right and early, is it?
This is Morning Sedition on Air America. Screw the Nuge. How's that? I can't answer for my past. You know, I was hanging around with guys that dug them. And even when I was in Los Angeles, man, in Hollywood, when I was hanging around with, I don't need to drop names, with Sam Kennison, the Nuge came over, you know, to where you live, where we used to party, and Nuge came over to hang out with Kennison, and we had to stop doing drugs because the Nuge didn't do any. So we had to all sit there and pretend like we weren't doing nothing.
But why did you have to stop just because he did?
Because we're, you know, we didn't, you know.
You didn't want him to know you did.
It was Kennison's party, too.
Oh, okay.
Anyways, enough of my dark past. But I did get to play guitar with the Nuge. Not that it was a high point in my life. It happened, folks. I put it out there. I admit. Back to Greg's penance. Greg, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
All right.
Okay. Sorry about the whole Nuge thing.
No, he's not.
Wait, how old are you, Greg?
I'm 34.
Oh, so you missed the Nuge, didn't you?
Well, yeah, I heard a little of them in college, but
you didn't do anything.
Turned off the radio.
Nah.
Yeah, I mean, I had this weird two worlds, you know. I had the whole punk new wave thing going, and on the other side, I had these weird hard rock buddies. I got it all. I covered all of it. But here's your penance, Mister. I'm in support of nuclear energy. I'll tell you what: if you're in support of these new nuclear reactors and you feel so comfortable about it and what it's going to do for global warming, you have to live next to one. Can you do that?
Sure.
Is there one?
Yeah.
I'm just saying that you know you're if you have that much faith in it, maybe are they going to build one in your town?
No. We have one. We have an old plant like 35 miles south of us, but that's
one of those old clunky nuclear reactors. All right, well, I hope you're right about this, but it's really, time will tell, and I think that if you can, your penance would be to move to a place as close to one of these new reactors as possible, and then call us in 20 years, and maybe we can talk to your two heads.
Well, we could use it as a protest anyway. You can move to another country and...
I know people. No, we'll stay here. We gotta ride this thing out, dude. Because they're gonna cut and run eventually, and they're gonna need us. The country's gonna need us. Thanks a lot, man.
Starting to unravel, hopefully, on them. So.
Yeah. Well, it's sad when we have to hope that it unravels. Take it easy, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
That's the worst thing about what's going on in this world. It's like it's gonna get really bad, and that's the best thing that can happen. You know. All right, Jim. Supposedly, Jim in Chicago. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
What's your sin? What's your sin?
Well, Jim's an alias because I don't want to doubt it on this.
Yeah.
But here's what happened. I was volunteering in a Kerry campaign in a Midwestern city in a battleground state.
Yeah.
I went with Kerry, north of Chicago.
You went with Kerry, north of Chicago?
Right.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
Okay.
And there was this woman in the office I was working at. She was a congressional staffer, detailed there for a couple of weeks.
Uh-huh.
And she was really hot.
Uh-huh.
Now, I've been married about 15 years, never cheated on my wife. I hope I never do, but I would have with her.
Uh-huh.
Had she have shown the slightest bit of interest.
Wow.
On election night, you know, that's when it would have happened. I had it all figured
early,
out.
Early, you mind. Mean early on election night.
Well,
after 8 o'clock, you know, I mean, but I had it figured out.
You had it all worked out in your head.
Yeah.
And you've gone over it several times.
Oh, yeah, over and over.
Ooh.
Man, if
no, nothing happened.
Nothing happened. Well, maybe, if only Kerry had won.
I would have.
You might be divorced now if Kerry had won.
I know, that's terrible.
Right.
But, so I feel really bad.
Well, you know, I don't, you know, you didn't, which is good, and this is not really a sin in the standard sense, because
but
you
I
did.
I left it in my heart.
Well, that's really okay in the liberal book, as far as I can tell. But, you know, maybe you should... did you buy your wife a guilt present yet?
No.
I think you should go out and buy her a nice guilt present.
Okay.
You know, which is like, you don't have to tell her why. Just one of those nice sort of like, here's a necklace because I'm an ass presents. How's that?
I could try that.
Okay,
there
buddy.
You go.
Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Yeah, you know, I hope you tell this the truth. I got a feeling that maybe you've gone further. Maybe that wasn't a full confession.
I don't know. We know Jim isn't his real name.
All right, well, let's thank you for all your calls. Thank you for confessing your sins. You know, I hope we helped. Let's get into this thing right now. John Bolton, Mark Riley, is the new guy up for the ambassador to the UN. Tell me about this guy, Mark.
He is a neoconservative.
Mm.
He is, despite his public statements to the contrary, a unilateralist, at least in terms of his words. He is a hawk. His name is John Bolton. And in 1994, he said, quote, there's no such thing as the United Nations, the agency that he will now represent the United States in. If the UN secretary building in New York lost 10 stories, it wouldn't make a bit of difference.
Mm.
End quote.
So this is the guy that they chose. So they're basically saying, you know what? To hell with you, right?
Yeah.
They're basically just saying, you know, the UN, this is how we feel about it. You know, we're not on board.
Well, you know, it's funny. Condoleezza Rice, our Secretary of State, is backing this guy 100%. They're trying to cast him in the mold of Jean Kirkpatrick. You remember her?
Yes, yeah,
former UN ambassador.
Reagan, right?
She used to smoke a pipe, that woman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was one of those, you know, the UN better do what we want or else kind of people. And that's exactly the kind of person that Bolton's going to be. He's, you know, he supposedly stood up to North Korea, stood up to the Chinese. We'll see what the kind of fallout from those two countries comes with his, you know, with
so
his
the
nomination.
UN has survived just, you know, equally as, you know, stubborn and asinine ambassadors before.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, Bush, by doing his signals, he's going to play hardball with the UN. He has nominated a hardhead to be America's ambassador to the world body.
So he's basically going to try to make the UN the neocon death cult bitch.
Exactly.
I got it.
Plaything.
Yes.
You know, mistress.
Yeah, here, you guys can go in and clean up, but that's only how you're going to be involved. Now, we made a mess. Hey, where's the UN janitorial staff to clean up our mess?
Yeah.
Is that it?
No, he's trying to act nice. He's trying to say, for example, quote, working closely with others is essential to ensure a safer world, which you could see on some kid's report card somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Very strange stuff. But Bolton is our new guy.
Crypto-fascist zombie brigade coming up next, folks.
Yeah.
Right?
Assuming he's confirmed, we got a bunch of stuff coming up, including your boy.
Yeah, Jack Bulwer is coming. He's funny, and he's got stories.
Yeah, fun stories. When we come back here on Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Cholesterol.
Six past the hour. It's Morning Sedition. I'm Mark Maron. That's Mark Riley.
Yes, it is.
Good morning, folks. Good morning, philosophy kings and queens, working class heroes, geniuses, progressive utopians, Angelinos, Oregonians, Tennesseans, Texans, Californians. There's two types. There's Angelinos and Californians.
And Californians.
Uh-huh. Did I say Washingtonians? Is that how you say it? Washingtonians? Yeah. Look, I don't know. I'm just trying to look at
no,
like
Washingtonians
that,
makes perfect sense.
I'm trying to say hi to some people in the other parts of the country.
Okay.
Hello,
did
yeah.
you say good morning to New Yorkers?
Oh, damn. Good morning, New Yorkers.
Yeah, baby.
I forget sometimes that, like, you got to say hi to people. We live right here.
They'll be waiting downstairs.
We're sitting in it right now. We are in the tub that is New York. It's raining out. All this weather shifting has gotten me, makes me, you know,
yeah,
everyone's
know.
Getting sick. So let me make a couple of quick announcements here before we get into everything else. I'm going to be at Cobb's Comedy Club in San Francisco on Friday and Saturday, April 1st and 2nd. You can go, all you people who are listening to 960 AM, The Quake in San Francisco, come by and check it out. Or come on down from other parts of the Western Seaboard and see me. You can go to the tour dates page of morningsedition.com for info and tickets. Now, the other thing. The entire extended Milfington family is on vacation, so vote for your favorite Milfington comedy bits at morningsedition.com, and we'll play the winners. Tomorrow is War on Brains, so go to morningsedition.com right now to pick out your favorite War on Brains, and tune in tomorrow to hear the winner. Later in this hour, we're going to talk to my buddy Jack Bulwer, one of my oldest friends. He's a writer. If you go way back, you might remember the Nose magazine, certainly in the Bay Area. He's written quite a few books. He's written Sex American Style, The Golden Age of Hetero. He's also written San Francisco Bizarro, which is, you know, Jack finds the interesting stories, Riley. Now he's doing a lot of travel writing, and he's a great guy. He's going to tell us about some of his recent adventures or discoveries in the world of oddities. Now, moving into the Crypto-Fascist Zombie Brigade, I want to, you know, read again from The 14 Characteristics of a Fascist State by Lawrence W. Britt, also found in the Sermon of Davidson Lore from the Unitarian Universalist Church of Austin, but I found the original one from Professor Britt. A couple other characteristics of a fascist state as we lead into what we're going to talk about next.
Religion and the ruling elite tied together. Unlike communist regimes, the fascist and proto-fascist regimes were never proclaimed as godless by their opponents. In fact, most of the regimes attached themselves to the predominant religion of the country and chose to portray themselves as militant defenders of that religion. The fact that the ruling elite's behavior was incompatible with the precepts of the religion was generally swept under the rug. Propaganda kept up the illusion that the ruling elites were defenders of the faith and opponents of the godless. A perception was manufactured that opposing the power elite was tantamount to an attack on religion. Sound familiar, people? Now, how does this play into what we were talking about before? We spent almost 2 hours talking about the bankruptcy legislation that's being pushed through, trying to be pushed through. There's an amendment. Schumer's amendment's probably going to be voted on today. We'll see what happens, but it doesn't look good.
Now, right? Schumer's amendment, for those of you who are just joining us, Schumer's amendment would drop the shield of allowing people who engage in violent protests at abortion clinics, violent protests at abortion clinics, in terms of financial judgments against them. In other words, if a court fines them, for example, $50,000, they won't be able to declare bankruptcy and discharge that debt.
Now, in light of the bankruptcy legislation, the Social Security legislation, what's going on with Medicaid, I want to read the number 9 characteristic of fascism. Power of corporations protected. Although the personal life of ordinary citizens was under strict control, the ability of large corporations to operate in relative freedom was not compromised. The ruling elite saw the corporate structure as a way to not only ensure military production, but also as an additional means of social control. Members of the economic elite were often pampered by the political elite to ensure a continued mutuality of interest, especially in the repression of have-not citizens. Now, what's going on here, Riley, that I'm trying to figure out is current unemployment levels right now have increased from to 5.4% in February from 5.2% in January. 8 million Americans are officially considered unemployed, but as many as 6 million more are only working part-time because they can't find full-time work.
We spoke to a couple of folks who are exactly in that situation.
There are 45 million people uninsured in this country today. There are the number of people who lost their health insurance during the first term of Bush's administration, 5 million. I mean, in the number of initiatives proposed by George W. Bush to help more Americans gain access to affordable health care, zero. All right, so where are all these people going to go? The unemployed, the disenfranchised, the people that can't declare bankruptcy if this legislation goes through. Now, I'm starting to see how their plan works. If you're desperate and you're angry and you're vulnerable and you're at a loss and you can't get either antidepressants or health care or any sort of help, who do you turn to? If you don't turn to a gun, there's a real good chance you might turn to God if given the right incentive. Now, let's talk about this. Let's talk about this this wing of the Justice Department, okay, that nobody seems to know about, okay? The Justice Department has a religious rights unit that was established 3 years ago, okay? It was launched in an effort aimed at rectifying what the Bush administration views as years of illegal discrimination against religious groups and their followers. Basically, what this will enable the faith-based initiative, people and organizations that get public money, correct?
Yes.
Is to discriminate on behalf of religion.
What it means is that if, for example, you have a particular church that is administering, let's say, an anti-drug program, and you want to be an anti-drug counselor, and that church says in order to be an anti-drug counselor in this agency, you have to declare publicly that Jesus Christ is your Lord and Savior. If you don't do it, you don't get hired, and that would be legal.
And it's a mission statement, too, is that means that if you're going there for help, and we've talked to people, we're talking about Salvation Army. I'll talk about them right now because this piece that I'm drawing from is written about Salvation Army. We talked to a drug addict who went to the Salvation Army for help, and not only was he told that he needed to accept Christ into his heart, but he was told that he needed to vote for Bush. Now that seems to be par for the course. Now, the real thing is here is that the Civil Rights Act of 1964 preserves the right of religious organizations to discriminate in hiring. It does not address the question of whether that applies to groups that accept public funds. So this is a really interesting issue. If they're funneling public funds into these faith-based initiative programs that have the right to discriminate in hiring in terms of religious preference, and also that means that they also have the right to muscle or bully or coerce victims who are coming to them for help into believing in whatever particular God they might believe in, which usually is Christianity in this country.
Mark, this is an attempt to blur and now an historic line in the sand in terms of the spending of public money. On the one hand, you've got people that say, well, we shouldn't be spending money on things like public broadcasting or the National Endowment for the Arts or any of these other organizations that support the art. The arts. They don't want public money to be spent there. But it is okay to give public money to organizations that tell people who either come to seek treatment or come to seek work that you must believe in the tenets, the religious tenets of that organization. It is about the business of how public money is spent. See, because, you know, you start with this, and next thing you know, you might be able to spend for Bob Jones University. Could ask for public money and say, well, yeah, we discriminate against black people, but, you know, that's part of the tenets. It's part of our religious tenets.
Well, I think it's part of the plan of the Christo-Fascist Zombie Brigades of the neocon death cult. This is the first movement towards, you know, converting the populace of marginalized people, you know, into this, you know, into these, you know, religious factions. I mean, think about it. You know, there's so many uninsured. There's so many places that don't have pensions. There's, you know, no health coverage for a lot of people. The Social Security is in question. There's going to be no minimum wage hike. There's no protection through bankruptcy anymore. There's going to be a lot of desperate people that, you know, should be helped by the government on some level because that's what's fair, but yet they are going to be sort of coerced subtly towards these religious organizations. That's their big plan. And if you don't take Jesus into your heart, then adapt or die.
Well, the big issue here, too, Mark, is going to be in education. Because remember that school vouchers is one way of transferring public money into parochial religious school systems.
Yeah, there's that, and there's the homeschooling people, the religious fanatic homeschoolers. They're not all religious fanatics, but there is a large contingent of homeschooling families that are they're homeschooling because they think that the secular beliefs of the public schools are just too much for the fragile minds of their kids, and they want them to be religious fanatics, and now there's a college that accommodates that. And that college is specifically designed to integrate its graduates into the U.S. government. We're going to talk about that a little more when we come back at 16 past the hour.
I'm Reverend Al Sharpton, and you're listening to Morning Sedition. Talk about the issues we're fighting for our lives here on Air America Radio.
Twenty past the hour, Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. Morning Sedition, the facts, the fury, the funny. Don't be stupid. It feels like thinking. Hey, you guys. Look, you know what the problem with true belief, Mark? You know what the real problem with people who really believe, with believers? You know what I can't stand about them?
They think everybody else is wrong.
It eliminates doubt. Yeah. Exactly. There's no doubt. They have no doubt. And once that is in place, if you can exploit that particular type of thinking, man, there is no end to the evil that can be done. Now, this is an interesting article that I've been looking at about how much the evangelical presence within the Capitol building itself, that what's happening is a lot of those sort of grassroots, guerrilla tactic, evangelical activists who were, you know, coming in at the local level in very radical ways have now sort of, you know, changed their message. They're not as radical sounding anymore, and they're going legit. You know, they're going, what was the term you
used? They're going up market.
Yes, that's great. We'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Let me do this. This thing. Let me interrupt the flow with the comedy that I had planned.
Wait a minute. I know what happened. Brendan McDonald got in your ear, didn't he?
No, he
said, Hey, I want my minute.
No, I get you know, too many things on my head, and I forget that sometimes when you read the headlines, it can be tough to figure out just exactly what the mainstream media is saying. So luckily, I have this iNews 5000 here, this Wi-Fi headline translator, that will tell us, you know, the real meaning of the headline. So let's get it cranked up and do a little of this. From the New York Times, Bush nominates weapons expert as envoy to UN. Bush nominates weapons expert as envoy to the UN. Translation, Bush to UN, drop dead. No, seriously, drop dead. From Fox News, smoking pill shows promise.
Smoking pill shows promise. Translation, prisons fear collapse of currency system. From news.com, another man cuts off penis and eats it. Huh. Another man cuts off penis, eats it. Translation, Bobby Flay says latest culinary craze won't last. That's the iNews 5,000.
That wasn't a real story.
It was a real story.
It wasn't a real story.
It was.
Okay.
It was. I mean, yeah, I don't want to go into it. It's better we just do the headline.
No, I don't want to go into it either.
That'll cause us trouble. I know. So let's get into this. What did you say? They're going up market?
They are
that.
Going up market.
Like
they are
that.
Doing the down low. I mean,
okay.
Yeah, we had a guest in here to talk about the down low thing in the black community.
Yes.
Well, in the evangelical community, the down low is infiltrating government.
Infiltrating is a good word.
Yeah, they go into government and they say, look, you know, I'm just like you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not abnormal. I don't speak in tongues. I don't act crazy.
No.
I have my edges polished off.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not talking about bringing fire and brimstone and, you know, liberals are all going to hell.
Closet fanatics.
Yeah, and what they do is get in. And little by little, they begin to change the agenda. It's kind of almost like Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
Well, they've been doing it on a local level, but now, you know, with people like, Senator John Thune, who is, you know, by all means a religious fanatic.
Yeah, he's a religious fanatic, but see, here's the thing with Thune. Thune beat Tom Daschle. That makes him a national icon. To the right.
Right. He's a hero to these people.
Absolutely.
And the thing is that, you know, I'm not condescending all Christians, but, you know, the Christians I'm talking about, a lot of, real Christians know that these people do not apply any of the principles of Christianity to their behavior. It's just a reality. They're political monsters, and they're creating a new generation of religious fanatics who are politically savvy to infiltrate the government. And like I said before, you know, people who are true believers have no doubt. And when they have no doubt and also no sense of history, aside from, you know, their sort of, you know, their twisting of the teachings of Jesus, then what you have here is, you know, they're blank slates, dude. You know,
oh, they're blank slates.
Blank slates.
But understand this too, Mark. What these folks are about is infiltrating the Washington inside the Beltway intellectual establishment so that their agenda does not have to face the kind of hurdles that it has traditionally faced over the last 30 years or so.
One more characteristic of fascism from Professor Britt, if I might, disdain and suppression of intellectuals and the arts. Intellectuals and the inherent freedom of ideas and expression associated with them were an anathema to the regimes, the fascist regimes of history. Intellectual and academic freedom were considered subversive to national security and the patriotic ideal, unless it goes along with the fascist, you know, ideology. Now, okay, let's talk about Patrick Henry School.
Oh,
all
yeah.
Right? Now, this is a school that, you know, is designed. It's a college, Patrick Henry College. It's designed for people who come out of Christian homeschooling and, out of the graduates, all right, of Patrick Henry, of nearly 100 interns working in the White House this semester, 7 are from roughly 240 students enrolled in the 4-year-old Patrick Henry College.
Hold that for 1 second. This is important for people to realize. This is 7%. From a school that only has 240 people.
So
Harvard doesn't have that many, have 7% of its people working in government like this, not straight out of school.
See what's going on? Do you see what's going on? This is how they're coming in. About two-thirds of the students major in government. It's one of the few schools anywhere that offer special programs in intelligence and foreign affairs. It's well-funded. It's not operating on any public money. It's operating by private donors. The Patrick Henry College has an agenda. The Christians in the Capitol, the evangelical Christians, have an agenda. All right, we're looking at some real seeds of real fascism, folks. And I don't exactly know, you know, what to do about it, but I'm greatly concerned by it. Right.
Well,
now.
One of the things you have to do about it is point it out to people, and that's exactly what we're doing. Remember, these are young people; they're going to be in government for 20, 30 years, spouting this nonsense.
We're going to be doing some traveling to Planet Bush after this, and also talk to my travel writer friend Jack Bull. Stay with us on Air America Radio.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
34 past the hour. Mark Maron here with Mark Riley.
Good morning.
It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. Boy, what a day it's been already, Riley. It feels like we've covered a lot of stuff. You know, Max Cleland's coming tomorrow. That should be. Well, we're going to be on the phone with him, I believe. In just a few minutes, my buddy Jack Boulware, one of the great travel writers of his generation and one of the great seekers of interesting stories, will be with us. But right now on the phone, it looks like we've got a call. You know, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world. And on the phone once again is Planet Push correspondent Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. God's got a speed limit, and you were doing 90,
okay.
Son.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Seems to my deed.
Okay, look. Hey, buddy, I never thought I'd say this, but let's talk about the Ten Commandments.
Oh, when you say things like that, I can tell you're taking baby steps toward the Lord.
Oh, no.
Let go. He'll catch you.
No, I'm sure he will. All right, look, the Supreme Court's been debating whether it's legal to display the Ten Commandments in public buildings or on public grounds.
Isn't that hogwash, Mark?
What?
It's not only legal, it's mandatory in the Sturch.
The Sturch?
Church, state, Sturch, learn it, use it.
Oh,
okay?
God. Yeah,
how could it not be? The Ten Commandments are a memo directly from God's HR department. Priority one, top of the inbox. Come to my office.
Wait a minute.
See me now.
The Constitution says there should be no state-sponsored religion, my friend.
Well, technically, yes, but when you have a church like we do, it's actually a religion-sponsored state.
No, come
That's
on.
A totally different idea.
Come on.
The founding fathers thought of America as one big faith-based initiative.
Come on. Lawton, displaying the Ten Commandments in public buildings is imposing one set of religious ideas on everyone else, and that is not what the Founding Fathers had in mind at all.
Why are you so threatened by the Ten Commandments?
I am not threatened by them, Lawton.
Oh, yeah, you don't sound like it at all. But why don't you read them to us? Folks out there, I think, will get a lot out of this. You know, the tone of this program is elevating all the time.
I'm not going to do this. All right, I will. I'll show you. They don't scare me. One, thou shalt have no other gods before me.
Well, no one likes to be second. You Democrats should all know how that feels.
All right, I see where this is going. Kinda. Two, thou shalt not make for thyself any graven image.
Well, that's worshiping statues of cows and Buddhas and what have you. Basically, all of Asia breaks this one.
No, wait a minute. All right, here's thou shalt not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain.
I saw your stand-up act, Mark. You might want to take a long look at this one, my friend.
Why am I doing this, man? Remember the Sabbath to keep it holy.
No working on Sunday. Except for NFL football, and they're doing the Lord's work.
Oh, yeah, wait a minute. All right, honor thy father and mother.
Now that's an endorsement of President Bush's Social Security plan.
Wait a minute.
It's right there in the Bible.
Come on.
I can't argue with that. These are commandments.
All right. Thou shalt not kill. Wait. Hello? Nothing?
Well, that's not one of the important ones.
What? What is that? All right. Thou shalt not commit adultery.
Bill Clinton. Next.
Wait a minute. Thou shalt not steal.
That's another endorsement of President Bush's Social Security plan.
No,
two times. The same commandment. Deny that, heathen.
How does that make sense? Or thou shalt not bear false witness against thy neighbor.
Yeah, you know, I live in a gated community with 24-hour surveillance, so that's not really relevant.
Now, you're twisting these. You're twisting them. Thou shalt not covet. Oh, my God. Where did that come from?
I want to be Matthew Broderick. I covered his whole life. He goes from Broadway musical comedy to TV to film, whatever he wants. And he's married to Sarah Jessica Parker. It's not fair. He was in The Music Man on this Hallmark channel. 96 John Bosley, the big brand.
Oh, no, he's
behind Ken
Carson.
Right behind. I hate you, Matthew Broderick.
All right, buddy. Oh, my God. Lawton, take it easy. We've all broken a few commandments occasionally. It'll be okay, buddy. It'll be all right. Wow. That was a bad one.
You know, just put those commandments right out there on the front lawn of the courthouse.
No.
You know, right next to a big old crucifix and a statue of Ronald Reagan.
Oh, wow. All right. See you later.
Perfect. Whoops.
Bye, Lawton.
God loves you. Thou shalt deal with it.
All right.
Did you enjoy
that? Yeah, that was great. You get out of here.
I'll see you.
All right, bye. I'll see you. He says.
Thou shalt deal with it.
I can't tell if we're friends or not sometimes. You know, sometimes it feels like we are, and I'm not comfortable with that. Right now, on the phone, his work has appeared in Wired, Playboy, San Francisco Chronicle, CNN Traveler, and the London Independent. His books are San Francisco Bizarro, a Guide to the Notorious Sites, Lusty Pursuits, and Downright Freakishness in the City by the Bay. He also wrote a book called Sex American Style, an illustrated romp through the golden age of heterosexuality. My dear friend Jack Bulwer. Morning, Jack.
Good morning.
How are you, man?
I'm all right. I have Matthew Broderick.
Yeah. This is my friend Mark Riley with me here.
How you doing?
Oh, good. So, look, Jack, where you been lately? Tell me about this, because I remember a few weeks ago you told me you were going up to Oregon to hang out with truffle hunters.
Yeah, I just got back.
How'd that go? Was it an adventure?
You meet a bunch of guys who are totally insane about truffles. You
know? Like how?
They're all wearing fleece, and they have rubber boots and a garden rake. And you stomp through the forest, and you start scratching around roots of trees trying to find underground fungus, basically.
Yeah. Wow. Now, tell me about the guy who was, like, you know, Mr., like, you know, truffle expert, the scientist.
Well, there were a couple of scientists on board for this particular thing, and they kind of got an argument about where the, you know, the genus name of the truffle came from in the middle of the forest, and, you know. I don't know. It all sounded like, you know, Gluteus Maximus or, you know, tuber something or other. I don't know what it was. But
yeah. Did you find any?
You know, there's the truffle world is astonishingly small but very potent.
Do they use pigs?
No, they don't. They use pigs in Italy and France, but as one guy told me, the pigs eat the truffle if they find it.
Oh, okay.
The truffle emits an odor that's very similar to a male boar's sex organ.
I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Sounds yummy.
So apparently female pigs, they just make a beeline for it. And the males do, too, because they want to, you know, beat it up, I guess.
Did you find any truffles with these guys?
They found zero.
Oh, man. So how does that story end when you write a story like that?
Well, we're standing on the road in the middle of Oregon, in the middle of nowhere, discussing, Italian truffle shavers. And then somebody tells me I should go to this restaurant, which apparently specializes in truffles.
Right. So
I call up the chef, and I end up driving another hour and a half through the countryside in the dark. I get to this big restaurant, and the chef's there. Hey, how you doing? He gives me a whole bunch of truffle dishes and brings out a bag of them, like 30 of them.
Yeah.
And they're like the size of a baseball, each one. And they stink to high heaven.
Really bad, huh?
So powerful. But, you know, they're supposed to be an aphrodisiac. They have all these mystical qualities throughout history. Everybody's written about truffles. So he gives me one to go home, to take home.
Yeah.
So I'm packing the next morning. I'm thinking, this thing just is stinking like crazy, you know? So I think, well, should I put it in my luggage and stink up my clothes, or do I put it in my backpack and stink up, you know, whatever I have in my backpack?
Yeah.
So because you'll put it in your refrigerator, and within 2 days, everything in your fridge will smell like a truffle.
Truffle-ized.
It goes through plastic. It goes through eggshells. It's just, you know, super strong. So I put it in the overhead compartment on the plane right at home, and I start to smell it throughout the cabin of the aircraft.
So you're just sitting there minding your own business. You're like, oh, no.
No, I'm smelling it, you know. It's like the smell I've had for, you know, a day in my nose is like, oh, here we go.
Right, and the male pig sitting next to you was going nuts.
Oh, I jumped him.
Bada boom! So I want to hear about the because, like, I've known you for years. You've been to Anton LaVey's house. You've covered Captain Clearlight, the inventor of window pane acid. You've gone on a search for Voltaire's heart. You've interviewed the guy who impersonated Randy Meisner, the bassist of the Eagles, for 10 years and was doing prison time. And you went to Prague. So when we come back from the break, I want to hear about the Prague journey and maybe a little bit about the Malaysian journey.
Sure.
Okay, so we'll be back in a second with my buddy Jack Bulwer. It's 43 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition, on the air, and online. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
We're on the phone with my buddy Jack Boulware here on Morning's Edition. It's Air America Radio. That's Mark Riley.
Hi.
I'm Mark Maron. It's 48 past the hour. You can go to jackboulware.com, JACKBOULWARE.com. They'll have a link to it on our site to see the world of Jack and everything he's ever written. So, Jack, buddy, you've been around a while, man. You got some serious work behind you.
I don't know. You know, I'm bored. I'm finding something else, you know.
Well, you've been running around. I mean, what's Prague like, dude? What'd you do in Prague?
I was going to interview Czech sumo wrestlers.
Come on.
Sumo wrestlers are huge in Prague in the Czech Republic.
Who knew?
There's 500 of them there, and there's only 50 in the entire United States, so they're totally serious about it.
They're going crazy for the sumo wrestlers in Prague.
You know, that would be interesting.
Yeah.
And so I go there, and the main guy has the flu and can't talk to me for 7 days.
Oh, wow.
So you're
I have to kill time in Prague in 7 days wondering if I'm ever going to interview these guys. But I did end up finding them, watching them practice. You know, they put on the little Mawashi diaper things and do their deal, you know, in the basement of an old sports stadium. And then the guy says, "You want to go out for breakfast? Let's talk." And we go out, and we end up having 6 beers for breakfast.
the diet of the sumo wrestler.
Part of the diet. He says the secret is the big toe.
Oh, wow.
They push off all their force, you know.
Oh, okay.
Incredible.
The whole spiritual thing, like what, you know, sumo does to you and everything. But Prague was pretty cool because I didn't know anything really about it. You know, all the revolution. Havel was the president, and he was the playwright and all that. But did you know that defenestration comes from Prague? You know, the act of tossing someone out a window?
No, I didn't even know there was a word for that. It's called defenestration?
Defenestration, and apparently there's 2 phases of defenestration in Prague's history. People, you know, tossed out some town councilors in like 1618, and they were Catholic.
Uh-huh.
And then 200 years before, people were telling them how to run their town or their country, and they tossed them out the window, and they were also Catholic, you know.
So that it's exactly.
Like, how many of us have wanted to toss a Catholic out?
So,
I tell this to my friend, and he says, "You have to see the Infant of Prague. Have you ever heard of this?"
The what?
The Infant of Prague.
The Infant of Prague. I have no idea what you're talking about.
No.
It's a statue of the little baby Jesus in this old crumbling church. And it's really odd because most of the Czech Republic is atheist.
Uh-huh.
50 to 70% of it is atheist. Yet people come from all over the world to worship this little baby that's, you know, 50 or maybe 20 feet up a wall in a glass, you know, encased cage. It looks like a baby wets a lot. It's just, you know.
Well, so why is it so special?
I don't know. It's a wax, you know, image of the baby, and they were floating around Europe, you know, I don't know, 300 or 400 years ago, and this was, you know, a very popular sort of thing to have. And I start laughing in the church because it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's got a little gown on, you know, that the nuns make for it every 3 weeks, and it's got a little crown that makes it look like a hydrocephalic kind of a thing.
Oh, I saw St. Catherine's head in Italy.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was a real head, though. Riley, you know something about Brazil, though. Maybe you actually go to Brazil. What were you saying?
Well, Brazil has a whole school of jiu-jitsu. Now, jiu-jitsu is a Japanese form of martial arts, but, you know, there's a gigantic jiu-jitsu movement, a very skilled jiu-jitsu movement in Brazil.
You've been to Brazil, Jack?
No, I haven't. I'd love to go. There's, you know, there's ex-Nazis running around.
Yeah.
Somewhere in South America, there's a whole town that's made up of Civil War veterans, descendants of the American Civil War.
Where?
Somewhere in South America.
Oh, man, yeah. That sounds like a good story. Yeah. Ex-Nazis, Civil War survivors, and I think every third person is a prostitute in Brazil, aren't they?
Well, wait a minute now. You got the entire population of Cliffside Park, New Jersey upset now,
pal. Oh, I'm not talking about them.
They're Brazilian, half of them.
I'm saying, all I know is that I know some sick comics that go to Brazil for the worst reasons.
Yeah. Well, the sun.
Jiu-jitsu is very good, too.
Right, yes, jiu-jitsu is very good. So yeah. What about Malaysia? How long were you in Malaysia?
Malaysia is a trip because it's the main characteristic I found of Malaysians is the propensity to set world records.
Come on.
This is part of their culture. It's based on, of all things, a soft drink commercial slogan, which was Malaysia Boleh, which loosely translates to Malaysia can do it. So it was an ad campaign, and then people started shouting it at sporting events, and now it's kind of in the national consciousness, and locals, you know, it's kind of a means to push themselves and set goals and accept challenges like, you know, sitting in a box of scorpions for so many days, or juggling a ball 5,000 times, or running up a staircase backwards, or, you know, what's the longest pencil, you know? And they have this huge world record. I just got a copy of it in the mail recently. It's a coffee table book, color photos. The guy who started it was a former beauty pageant producer.
Uh-huh.
Every week someone sets a world record in Malaysia. I mean, it could be something like the tallest skyscraper or the longest line of guys arm wrestling.
Oh, my God. It's like I just get this picture that you step off the plane in Malaysia. It's like a Marx Brothers movie. There's just people doing weird stuff everywhere.
Almost every week they're presenting someone an official certificate in the news.
Oh, that's hilarious.
This explains the Petronas Towers, huh?
What's that?
This kind of explains the Petronas Towers.
It does, and it explains a lot of Malaysia, really.
Those are the huge, tall buildings
in Malaysia, and they are considered one of the tallest buildings in the world, although I think they're beaten out now by the CN Tower in Toronto.
But you know Malaysians are hard at work trying to beat that.
Jack, I got to ask you a question.
Sure.
You live in San Francisco, right?
I do.
The last time I was there, it wasn't quite the same great city I always remembered. What's going on out there?
What's going on?
Yeah.
I don't know. I never leave my house.
Oh. No, I mean, some people say the dot-com money ruined the city. I don't know. I just got a sense that it wasn't quite as much fun as it had as I remembered.
The dot-com money's all gone.
Oh, good. I can come back.
Yeah, you can go to a restaurant and there isn't like 58 kids in fashion eyewear and khaki pants on their cell phones anymore. You can actually move around the city now. You know?
Oh.
You know, Jack, we had a guy, someone on the phone, we did this thing called the Liberal Confessional, where liberals confess their sins, and somebody confessed going to see a Ted Nugent concert like a couple weeks ago. And I remember you and I went to see the Nuge and Bad Company, and we walked out and you said the only original member of Bad Company left is the logo on the drum. So, yeah, but like tell us about that thing, because you've got this on your website. Tell us the Foghat story, if you can, in a couple minutes.
Well, I don't know. The first concert I ever went to, I'm ashamed, but it was the band Foghat. But we have to start somewhere, right? Everybody remembers their first concert experience.
Yeah, we only got like a minute, so just characterize what they can see on your website.
Okay. Well, just for fun, I wrote like a liner notes, very pretentious liner notes, for a Blue Note box set of Foghat, 10 CDs. The guy who represents the lead singer's estate emails me asking where he can find it. He's looked all over and he can't find it.
Yeah.
I have to tell him, look, it's a joke. I email him back, it's a joke. A year later, the bass player emails me and says, hey, I saw your article. Thanks a lot for keeping the faith. a week after that, someone else who represents the current band Foghat, which is now the drummer, and the logo, email me and say, how dare you say that about Foghat? We're still alive. We're kicking better than ever, and they promised to send me their new DVD and their CD.
That's hilarious. So that whole back and forth is on the website. Jack, thanks for talking to us.
I'll call you
later, man. We'll cover some more stuff.
All right, Matthew Broderick.
All right, there buddy. Take it easy, Jack. That's my buddy Jack Boulware. You can go to jackboulware.com. We got a link to it on the site. He's a funny guy. Great stories. All right, so there's the liberal agenda from the Streisand compound. Today is International Women's Day. Okay, so one, insist that the United States come out with one more unpopular dollar coin with a woman on it. Suggest the Sarandon silver dollar. Two, how far have women come if we still have a TV show called Fat Actress? If we must have it, how about Weight Challenge Thespian? But only if we must. Three, ladies, wear a large bandage on your forehead to work. When people ask, tell them you bumped your head on the glass ceiling. Hello! Four, get in someone's face and nurture them. Five, today's phrase, just drop it into conversation. Gee, we get a whole day, not 67% of a man's day. Hey, thanks, pig. Wake up, sheeple. Men are obsolete. Tomorrow, we got Max Cleveland, right?
He's coming in. He's going to talk about politics. He's going to talk about war. He's going to talk about the whole nine yards. He's a great guest.
I'm going to go have lunch with Mark Crispin Miller. That should be uplifting.
Whoa, that ought to be uplifting and great for your paranoia.
Yeah, exactly.
Great show today, Maren.
You too, buddy.
See you tomorrow.
Okay.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.